You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, Seattle Mariners edition. I'm Danny Wexelman with Greg Johns. Greg, I'm thinking, you know, maybe do you want to talk about the weather, or it's National Chocolate Chip Cookie Day? Is there anything else you want to talk about today?
Weather in Seattle, always a topic. Chocolate chip cookies, never wrong. But the Shohei Ohtani seems to be the topic du jour here in Seattle and around MLB this weekend for sure.
If you've been on Twitter, you have seen a storm of tweets because he officially made his yes and no list. And it's basically Ohtani's world that we're all kind of living in right now, Greg. He's making his list. He's checking it twice. That's basically what's going on right now. And for our sake, the Mariners are in the running with six other clubs to be able to sign Shohei Ohtani. This is a huge deal. We're learning so much more about this guy. And clearly what we're learning is that money is not the driving force. There are so many other factors, which is really interesting. The Yankees are out. The Red Sox are out, which I don't think anybody saw coming. And I can't say enough about what's going on, but I also don't know that much. So that is why we have you here for our podcast today. We're talking on a Monday. A lot happened on Sunday, and a lot more is still going to happen. But let's just talk about what this means right now, that the Mariners are in the running, the final running, it sounds like, for Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, I think we've all been looking for the breadcrumbs, the clues as to what the mystery man it really is looking for. And I think we're starting to narrow it down a little bit. You know, the big clue yesterday was he doesn't want to be on the East Coast. Ruling out the big market teams back east, and the Yankees in particular was definitely a favorable thing for Seattle, sitting out west in a smaller market with a team with a lot of Japanese history. And the West Coast thing makes sense to me. Being a West Coaster and having flown to Japan, it's a long flight to Japan. I mean, it's 12 hour, 13, going the other way. It's like four, it takes you all day. Your day is flipped. You know, your world is upside down until you time adjust to that thing, which takes a couple days. You know, if you make that flight and then you have to fly to the East Coast another 5 hours, this is a long trek for a guy, getting back and forth if he wants to see family. I think it is a factor for Japanese players to consider when and this is a young guy who's, heading off to the big world. And I don't know if that is the factor. I don't know if even that's, why he's looking at the West Coast. Maybe it's just a comfort factor with the teams there, the Japanese American community, and cities like Seattle and San Francisco could be appealing to him. We don't know the answer to those, but I do know it's a long way from Tokyo to Seattle. I've made that flight, and it's a long flight just from Seattle to New York. I've made that flight too many times. So, you add it together, maybe he just wants to be a little closer to home when you're going that far away. So that's an interesting clue. Obviously, the glitz and glamour in New York, not first and foremost on his list. He is a small-town guy. I mean, that's something that, I've been aware of. He reminds me a little of Hisashi Iwakuma, who's a guy that loves the comfort of Seattle, the community here, a place to raise his kids, the schools, things like that are important to him. And I think sometimes we forget that when we talk about ballplayers and what they're considering. Sometimes it's family reasons. Sometimes it's comfort for them off the ball, off away from the field and in the community and things like that. So, if a guy thinks he'd rather be in an area that's not the hustle and bustle of New York, maybe he is looking for a little something different. So, those are things we're starting to see. And as you mentioned, Danny, it's definitely not money. As we know that for sure, because otherwise he'd be staying in Japan two more years and cashing in hundreds of million dollars when he could be a total free agent. So, we're starting to see some things. And Seattle, I know, happy to be on that final list, but playing it kind of low-key now to see where things go.
So I was trying to make a couple of points about what makes Seattle stand out. I have Ohtani landing in Seattle. Not that my opinion matters at all. I'm no expert, but I was thinking about a couple of things. Seattle is a medium-sized market. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
Seattle's medium-sized, so he's not going to have the circus. He's going to have it in the beginning, of course, and maybe his whole first year, but it's not going to be mean. It's not going to be the New York media that could write headlines and hurt him in a way that he doesn't seem to be want. He doesn't want to be hurt in that way, as well as, the Mariners have established a relationship with the Japanese in as far as players are going and cultivating them and helping them grow and thrive in Seattle. And like you mentioned, Seattle is extremely close to Japan. It's the closest American city to Japan. And also, he's going to be able to DH. And some people have been going back and forth, well, it would make more sense for him to be in the NL because he could come off the bench. But Seattle is in the AL. He'll be able to come off the bench a couple of days between his starts. And he's an elite guy, and he wants to be appreciated for that. Why else do the Mariners have a leg up on these other teams?
Jerry DePoto, top of the list. If you've ever talked to Jerry DePoto, this is a guy who can... He is a salesman, and I don't say that in a bad way. He's a salesman in the fact that when he makes a deal, he can tell you why that deal is part of the plan and explain it better than any general manager I've ever been around. And, you know, when you talk to him, you definitely get a sense of a guy that understands where he's going and his vision. And he's going to be the guy that walks into that room and speaks to Ohtani and his people and tells them what his plan is. And I guarantee you that's going to come across well, because Jerry DePoto comes across well. Yeah, I love talking to a guy. You want to just talk baseball with a guy, you put him, you know, A1 on a list. He's just a fun guy, a bright guy, and it comes across when you meet him. He is himself a good representative of the Mariners and what they're going for, and I think that's a key thing. I mean, it's like a college recruiting thing, and you look at college coaches that are personable, good with the media, those kind of things. Those are the guys that can sell kids and sell their program and those things. And then Jerry's very good at that. So I think that's going to be a key, you know, that you mentioned the being in the AL, you know, only two of the other teams that are in that seven are American League teams. So mm-hmm. DePoto has already said, hey, we're willing to move Nelson Cruz into the outfield a couple of days a week to play Ohtani at DH.
Huge.
You know, if that, you know, we're willing to do what it takes. And this is a team that does have a tradition of Japanese ownership, Japanese players, and has been looking at Ohtani for a long time. I know the Rangers are the same kind of boat, the Dodgers, the teams. You know, it's not like this guy's just popped up the last year, but the Mariners are one of those teams, and they have a plan in place, well planned out, well orchestrated, and they're going to go in with a pretty good pitch to woo him. And you're going to see some people when they meet in L.A., and the mayor's going kind of low-key on this and kind of keeping things quiet now after being pretty vocal, but now it's getting closer, you know, they're kind of keeping things close to the vest. But, you know, they're going to bring in players. They're going to have, you know, the guys, you know, I'm sure Iwakuma is going to be primary in that. You know, wouldn't surprise me if, you know, Nelson Cruz, some of the players that could come down and talk to him. And,
yeah.
You know, maybe you get a Ken Griffey Jr. in the room selling him on Seattle. You know, I mean, these are, you know, names that can play. And I don't know that Ichiro will be involved since he's not a Mariner anymore, but certainly his history with the Seattle organization can't hurt. I mean, this is a guy that as much of the Mariners' history as anybody, and one of Ohtani's favorite players growing up. So, I mean, these are factors that definitely add up to Seattle being a top contender, if nothing else.
Greg, you're going to be a busy man, I think. Do we have any idea of a timetable for when this decision could be made?
Well, we have a very definite idea of when it has to be done, because
right.
There's a December 22nd deadline. Now, clearly, you know, the whittling process went pretty quick from taking the 30 teams down to the seven.
Yeah, it did. It was like he was speed dating, Greg.
The man had a plan, you know. I mean,
yeah.
And he's got people working for him. So, you know, the next part, I mean, if he's going face-to-face interviews, you know, that's going to take some time. I mean, you know, each team's going to want to come in and have a chance to sit down with him. And I think they're going to want more than their 15 minutes of fame in the room. I mean,
for
they're
sure.
going to want time to really get to know him and let him get to know them. So, you know, that's all kind of in Ohtani's camp as to how much time they're going to give teams. But, you know, that's going to take some time. I would suspect we go into the winter meetings, and this is going to remain a pretty hot topic next week. But that December 22nd deadline is when it has to be done, when the agreement between Major League Baseball and the Japanese League is you know, that's the drop-dead deadline. So we're going to know this by Christmas. Somebody's going to have a pretty nice present under the tree.
That's true. I don't want to talk about anything else but Ohtani, but we have a couple other things we do have to cover. I think we covered it all for now. Did we get it all, Greg?
That's fair. I think, you know, someday this guy's going to sign and we're not going to know what to talk about.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's not the case. Okay, so Friday was a big day for all clubs. They had to decide whether or not they were going to tender contracts, which is such an interesting word, or let players go. So in the case of Drew Smyly and Shea Simmons, they're officially free agents, but Seattle and Andrew Romine came to a one-year agreement. So Smyly wasn't too big of a surprise with his lack of playing time that would be coming up this season, but Simmons was, and you wrote about this. Why was Simmons such a surprise?
Well, mostly because he's a fairly low money guy. I mean, the decision with Smyly is pretty obvious. You know, he was gonna be in line for over $5 million just based on MLB rules. And he made $6.8 million last year, and you've got to offer at least 80% of that. So it was gonna be a pretty good chunk of change for a guy coming off Tommy John and still rehabbing, and is gonna miss most of the year, if not all of it, this coming year. So they did try to work with Smyly and get him on a 2-year deal where maybe they could have got him at a lower price and kept him in the organization beyond next year, but couldn't come to an agreement there. And as far as bringing him back on a 1-year deal when he's not going to pitch didn't make much sense when he's then going to be a free agent after that. So Simmons is a little different deal. I mean, he's a guy that was probably going to make less than $1 million in his first year of arbitration, but also coming off a lot of arm problems last year. So, they gave up some pretty good prospects to get both Simmons and Smyly on the same day last January. And both those guys are going to be pretty big parts of what they did last year, and they wound up getting virtually nothing out of it. You know, Simmons came up in September as a September call-up. So my surprise with Simmons was he did seem to be getting healthy at the end of the year, and I thought they would bring him back and bring him into arbitration. So they're not saying why that didn't come to pass. You know, I don't know if it was an injury situation. You know, they're not going to lay out why they didn't bring a guy back, but yeah. It's certainly an interesting situation.
All right, onward and upward. Let's get back to Jerry DePoto. Very interesting man. I've never met him. Obviously, you've had a dozen and more interactions with this guy. He's got a weekly podcast, which I don't think everybody knows about. You are writing about it every week, but DePoto's on the podcast with Mariners play-by-play guy Aaron Goldsmith, and he's been pretty candid, which is also really interesting. I don't know if we've ever had someone in his position doing something like this on a weekly basis. So he talked about on their last episode, Eric Felea, who's out in the AFL right now. He's got a chance to make a jump in the organizational ladder. He won the batting title in the fall league. So let's talk a little bit about Felea, and let's talk about DePoto on this podcast.
Felea is an interesting case because it's kind of coming out of nowhere. I think it was a 23rd round draft choice. I'm going off the top of my head. Who hit well. He was kind of an older guy coming out of UCLA, and he's hit well at the lower levels. So they kind of threw him into the Arizona Fall League to see what he could do, and he hits .408 and wins the batting title, and certainly looks like hitting against top prospects and that he can compete. So they're talking about jumping him up a couple. He may get a shot at AAA. He was in high A last year, so he's kind of on the rise. He's an interesting case and a guy to keep an eye on in that in the minor league system. But yeah, DePoto's podcast I recommend to anybody who wants to listen to just a guy talking baseball. I mean, he'll talk spin rates, analytics, and explain things in a very understandable way. And he'll talk about old stories and people he knows in baseball, and he'll talk about Mariners. His first podcast, he talked about Ohtani, and it's pretty eye opening how open he was about their approach to pursuing him. So yeah. Pretty interesting eye into a general manager, and as I noted earlier, he's a guy that presents himself very well and a fun guy to listen to. So yeah, if you get a chance, to check out DePoto's podcast.
Crazy, crazy world. Everyone's got a podcast these days, Greg. Someone let me be on the podcast, so we have that too.
There you go.
All right, Greg, we're gonna hop in our DeLorean. We're gonna go back in time. We've got the winter meetings coming up. We're gonna go back to 2000. And look at one of the most pivotal moments in Mariners history, Y2K. People thought that the world was ending. Time was going to stop. I kind of remember it, but I just remember people being very on edge about the new year heading into 2000. But the Mariners, they were just hoping to re-sign Alex Rodriguez, right?
That's right. That was a big year. And coming off the previous year, Danny, when Ken Griffey Jr., they had to trade Griffey at the we look back on that year, and they go into 2000 with A-Rod having become a free agent. And this is a kid who was 25 at the time. He's coming off. He's hit 40-plus homers with three straight years, and this is a legitimate, obviously budding superstar. And they were fully intent to try to re-sign him. That had been their pursuit for several years, trying to get him to be a long-term guy. And they go into those winter meetings in 2000 down in Dallas, and lo and behold, in the midst of those meetings, one of the biggest bombshells of winter meetings history, he signs the 10-year, $252 million deal with the Rangers, and that sent shockwaves through that meeting. And, for the Mariners, Pat Gillick, in his second year as GM, he wasn't one of the guys that got stunned by the bombshell. He just kept moving. And, that was when he set the stage during those meetings for a lot of the free agents they brought in to really key that 2001 season when they won 116 games. And this is a team that lost Griffey and Alex Rodriguez and goes on to win 116 games in 2001. So pretty impressive what Gillick did back there. There's a reason he's in the Hall of Fame now. But he came out of that meeting, and they signed Brett Boone a little bit after that. Key, obviously, in that 2001 and beyond, Boone was huge. They had signed Ichiro earlier that offseason, so that Boone and Ichiro really were keys. But, it was kind of the smaller moves, Danny, that I look back that mm-hmm. he really made his money. He brought in Jeff Nelson that year. He brought in Norm Charlton, brought back the veteran Norm, and Boone, Tom Lampkin, a catcher that brought in backup. These kind of guys that really filled out that club. And then dating back to previous, in the previous winter meetings when they'd lost Griffey, and he came back and he signed John Olerud, Kazuhiro Sasaki out of Japan. They signed a couple of veterans, Stan Javier, Mark McLemore, Aaron Seeley they brought in. These are guys, as I look back, it's stunning that every winter GM signed free agents, but he signed like 7, 8, 9, those guys I just listed off. And these were like home runs each one, or at least a double off the wall. I mean, he didn't whiff on any of these guys. And this is the team and the reason that 2001 club came together and won 116 games and really was one of the historical teams in baseball. And the only thing they didn't do is win the World Series, and that's a fly in their ointment that's going to sting for a long time. But that group was an incredible baseball team, and Gillick kind of put it together in those winter meetings, despite that losing A-Rod there in the middle of that kind of the stunner in 2000, as I look back on it.
Greg, you're writing a story about this, right? It's going to be on MLB.com?
Yeah, we're going to look back kind of at some of the history of the defining moments in winter meetings, and that to me is one of the ones for the Mariners that, as you look back, that important stage in this franchise's history, that big run there in the early 2000s.
Do you anticipate this year's winter meetings being that crazy?
Well, we'll see what happens with Ohtani.
Yeah.
This winter meetings is, it's kind of funny, Danny, the last couple, at least from a Mariner perspective and somewhat more from industry-wide, have been a little anticlimactic because a lot of action has been before the meetings. DePoto has been one of those guys who's come in Seattle in particular and made a lot of moves before the meetings. And really when they get to the meetings, he's got a lot of his business done. And this year things industry-wide have been held up a lot by Ohtani, a lot by Stanton talk, and it's just not a lot of things have happened yet. So, DePoto is one of the few that's made a couple moves, and they brought in Ryan Healy and a couple other things to shore up things. But so he's still got a move or two to make, and I certainly think with Ohtani brewing over it, it will be an interesting time in Orlando.
All right, Greg. Well, I'm going to be refreshing my Twitter feed for the next 72 hours, if not more, and I know that you will be by your phone waiting and ready to rock. So we're going to find out soon either way. So hopefully not this podcast was not for nothing. That's what I hope.
Well, if the Mariners sign Ohtani, we will have a topic for many years.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's right.
And it'll be fascinating. Wherever he goes, it's going to be quite a story. And I think we all look forward to it just as baseball fans.
That's right. All right. Well, that'll do it for this week. I'm Danny Wexelman with Greg Johns, our Seattle Mariners reporter for MLB.com. Any news and updates, don't you worry. We will keep you posted, and we'll talk to you next time.